Welcome to Allison's Wonderland. I'm your host, Allison Packard. Join us as we journey through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole into the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Hey, do a girl a favor and please subscribe to this podcast and go on iTunes and leave us a good review. If you like the show, please help spread the word. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Allison's Wonderland. I'm really excited because tonight's guest is Robbie Daymond, voice actor who's best known, Robbie's credits are too numerous to list, but you might know him as Spider-Man in the animated series Spider-Man. Robbie was also Tuxedo Mask in Sailor Moon. He is Moomin Rider in One Punch Man and Sui Sui in Breadwinners, just to name a few. So I'm really excited to bring Robbie onto the show tonight. I hope you guys are all doing so well. It's so good to see you. Hey, Sebastian. Hey, Reed. Colette, what a pleasure. We would love to have you on someday. That would be amazing. I'm getting a lot of requests for more voice directors as well. So let me go ahead and see if Robbie's here and we'll add him to the show. He's not here yet, so that means it's time for me to vamp. Oh yeah, I hope you guys are having a good week. It has been pretty busy over here, which is always a pleasure. I know as more and more things come online, we are being presented with more and more opportunities to get out there and to meet people, to see people. But I don't know about you. I found it all to be at times a little bit overwhelming. I'm like, wait, how am I out in this world again? And it just seems that, you know, we're constantly having to face these challenges of putting so much on our plates. And I just was wondering, how are you guys dealing with that? Oh, you got your second COVID shot. That is so great. Molly, you're feeling maxed out and overwhelmed as well. I know. It's a lot. You, Sebastian, you were interviewed by Fred Tatasciore. That's amazing. We love Fred. He's such a talented voice actor here. Absolutely love Fred. Yes, I don't know if you guys saw, I'm also fully vaxxed. So that is part of the reason why I'm able to be out in the world again. And I just put out a music video yesterday called Vaxxed, Vaxxed Baby, which is a song that has been stuck in my head ever since I got my second shot. And I've just been thinking about that for a while. So let's see if, nope, not here yet, guys. Let me just go. Well, I want to double check that Robbie is good to go. Let me send him this. There we go. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and send him this live. And then, hey, Info Bobby, thanks for joining live. So I'm curious, I have some changes that I want to ask you about with Allison's Wonderland. So if anybody has a particularly strong thought about this, I would be so grateful for your feedback. Number one, how are you feeling about Wonderland being live on Instagram? Do you still think that this is the best platform for it? Or would you rather see it hear the podcast in its rebroadcast form? That is my first question. And my second question is, if you do like seeing it on Instagram, do you prefer that we keep it the 6 o'clock time slot, or do you want to move to 7? So let me know what you think about that. And yeah, you saw the vaxxed. You guys, Let's Talk Cartoons is on here. For those of you guys that are hardcore cartoon fans, I want to highly recommend that you follow Let's Talk Cartoons because they are such a great resource for what is coming out on all the streaming and network TV for some of the best properties. And he does a really good job. Devi, who runs the account, does a really good job of figuring out, you know, stalking basically all the network's Twitter accounts and making sure that he knows exactly what is coming on. You want to see it on Nickelodeon? You want to see this show on Nickelodeon? That would be amazing. I love Nickelodeon. Yay, I'm so glad. Well, Ravi has just joined us, guys. So why don't I go ahead and add him to this feed and we will make it a thing. All right, here we go. Put your hands together for Robbie Daymond. And you have to give him a little leeway because, you know, Robbie has a newborn baby to come, so.
Hello.
Hey,
well, let me
going?
Fix that. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Oh, it looks like we've got a second guest here. A little,
my little
munchkin is coming in to
the
say.
The baby babes?
Yeah.
Oh, happy birthday, little girl.
Good job.
I heard you just had a birthday. Is that true?
She can't hear you. I've got my AirPods.
Oh, you get your earbuds in.
Go on, get out of here.
I said happy birthday.
I will. There she goes. How are you? How have you been?
I'm doing good. I was just saying, this week, you know, starting to feel the impact of COVID and like, whoa, there's a lot going on. And how did that happen? Can I handle all this, you know, socialing?
Yeah, yeah. The real world coming back.
Yeah, not even that it's that much, but just I'm used to zero. So how about you?
I'm good.
How's your transition back to, are you transitioning back to regular life or?
Yeah, I've been vaccinated for a while, for a minute now, but it does seem like there's not a lot of not that many sessions are back yet. And it's sort of, there are a few here and there. So I've been going into the studio when they ask, but the rest of the world, yeah, it sort of feels, it feels like we're cruising back into it. LA's being careful, but we, you know, we open up in a week and like officially.
Yeah, totally.
And, yeah, I don't know. I don't think we were, I think we were super precautious because my wife was pregnant for the majority of COVID and then we had a little baby. So we were sort of not at risk, but you know, you want to be extra careful with that sort of thing. And now that we're back, we're just sort of enjoying it. We're easing into it nice and easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Where are you, by the way? I like your background.
Oh, this is just my, my backyard.
Is it your backyard? You have like a cement wall or something?
No, this is like a sunshade. See, it moves.
A sunshade.
It moves.
It looks so solid until you're just like, whack.
Yeah, I have a full studio that I like stream out of and do my voiceover stuff. And I just don't want to be inside. I don't want to be inside anymore. I'm done. Oh. No more inside for me. Yeah.
Yay. You got your, you can use your outside voice. Hello.
Sure. Yeah. As long as my wife doesn't yell at me, but no, it's good.
Right, for your neighbors.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, it's good to see your face. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, I mean, back in studio days, I think the last time I bumped into you, we were on the Warner Brothers lot somewhere doing something, or you were doing something. We might have been like two ships in the night. That's the way a lot of our stuff is.
Paths crossing in the night. I know. Yeah. I was thinking back. Do you remember the very first time we ever met?
Ooh, that's a tough one. What was the show? You got to tell me. You got to remind me.
Well, it's funny because it was for the pilot for Get Blake. Which was the show that you were on in Nickelodeon.
I was originally supposed
to play the neighbor, which was a role that then didn't make it into the series.
Just went away.
The role went away, which is such a bummer because we would have been able to do two seasons of fun.
I thought about that. That show's a funny one. That's one of those ones that I remember auditioning for back when I was like non-union. I remember that was auditioning, I think, in like... It had a bunch of different iterations. It was auditioning in 2009 and 10 and all of that stuff. But I don't think we got cast, started recording till like 11, 13, 14. I can't remember. I don't remember. But it would have been nice to, it would have been nice to work with you. Yeah.
It would have been fun.
Totally.
And, you know, I'm just curious, like, I know that you recently posted your TikTok, which is how you got into voice acting and do a theater kid. So, you know, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, you have a lot of formal training and you did a bunch of theater.
Sure. I just want to say hi to your chat. There's a bunch of nice people in here saying all sorts of nice things. So
thank you.
Thank you for the kind comments, chat. I'm glad you stopped by. Yeah. You know, for me, I was always a theater kid and I went pro when I was itty bitty. I got my equity card when I was like 10 or so. And just from doing local shows and professional theater. And then I started doing summer stock when I was about 13. And then I went to school for it. I went and got my undergraduate degree and then I got my master's.
That was in Vegas?
I got started my undergrad in St. Louis and then I went to Vegas and they were like, I auditioned all over the place and I got in a bunch of places. But at a certain point I just had to pick also whoever gave me the best scholarship.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to UNLV with the intention of going to grad school. So I knew they were bringing me in, but I knew they were bringing me in to do that. And so that's why I ended up choosing that school. So I had a 3-year program where they only brought in students every 3 years. There were 13 of us. And we taught the undergrads and there's a massive undergrad department. We had like, you know, over 100 kids sign up to be a major every year. And then usually that whittled down to about 30 or 40 by the time everyone graduated and went their own ways and got into the 400 level courses. What's my favorite musical? Someone asked
me. Yeah, I was just going to, what is your favorite musical? What's your favorite musical? What's your favorite play?
That's hard to say. The favorite question's always the toughest. God, I think I always was a huge Sweeney Todd nerd. I really like Sweeney Todd. I know that's old, but I like that. I was like Floyd Collins the last 5 years. Yeah. And then as far as like, I also like the funny stuff, like Comedy's Where My Heart Lies. So I loved Avenue Q. And then more modern stuff, obviously, like who doesn't love Hamilton? All the stuff I've seen on Broadway lately has been amazing. Like the revival of Oklahoma was amazing. What else? Waitress was great. Oh my God. The Tina musical was fantastic. There's just so much stuff out there that I love. Oh, hey, Deontay, what's up? And yeah. And then for straight plays, for non-musical plays, I love it all. My main course of study were the classics. So I was big into Shakespeare, modern styles, all of that stuff. So I those are sort of my favorites. I think some of my favorite plays are like Love's Labor's Lost. I really love The Tempest. Hamlet's one of my favorites, of course. And then modern plays, you know, I like most stuff that goes, I like some of the classic stuff, like the mid-century stuff, you know, like I love Death of the Salesman and all that stuff, but I really like modern plays. Like Alexa, a lot of the stuff from the 90s, like, oh gosh, like Torch Song Trilogy, Angels in America, and then all the more sort of modern stuff that's coming along these days, but there's not as much as there used to be. But yeah, a huge Sam Shepard fan. Yeah, all that stuff.
Do you find you have time for theater anymore?
Nah, I haven't done. No. The last live play I did was like in 2008 or 2009, and I did a Lawrence Fishburne's play, Riff Raff. We did it in Hollywood, and it was really fun because he actually came and saw the show one night, and that was a blast. We ran that in some 99-seater for like, oh gosh, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, something like that. But that's the last time that I've been on stage outside of the comedy show that I do, so yeah.
Do you think that's something you'd ever want to get back into and create time for, or is it just...
Right now, my own show that I do with my buddies, we have an improv and variety show that scratches that itch for me. So we do somewhere around a dozen to 20 cities per year, depending on how busy we are.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And usually the spaces are somewhere between a 500 seat house and like a 3000 seat house. So I get to do, and then we do two shows. We do a stage show and then we do a in the room sort of panel show. And that just kind of scratches that itch for me. I just don't feel like I could dedicate myself to that lifestyle. Yeah. It's a big part of the reason. I mean, I've got two kids and a wife and I can't I can't really go on tour. If I wanted to try to pursue that again, I couldn't really like spend 6 hours a night at a rehearsal hall.
For the theater. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that lifestyle. I lived it for, you know, 20 years. And once I moved to LA, that was a tactical move instead of New York, is because I knew that someday I wanted like a stable life. So yeah.
Yeah. And here you are.
Here I am, sort of.
You dad so hard.
yeah.
Here you are, Rock and BL, also father of two.
Father of two. I think the funniest thing is that I still have my equity card. I refuse to give it away. Mm-mm. I refuse. It has to go forever. Yeah.
I mean, do they even let, you can go anti-equity? I mean, I guess you could not renew it.
Yeah, if you didn't renew it, then it would just go away forever. Yeah, it wouldn't go away forever, but it would be harder to like get it back. But I think as much work as I do in the sister unions, it probably wouldn't be too hard. I pay SAG enough every year as it is.
Yeah. So, you know, you have two kids now. You have Mivi by one. Mm-hmm. And how has that changed your work? Do you think that it working in animation, like that you've seen a significant shift? And
no, I don't. Not really. I mean, you know, if I'm being completely candid, my wife has taken the lion's share of child raising duties. I mean, I'm very present. I'm very active when I'm not working. I'm at home with my family. But so that's been easier for me to transition in that way. So, you know, I honor and respect her for taking that part of her life and changing that all around, because she had a fantastic career, which she'll eventually reconnect with, I'm sure. But yeah, so for me, if anything, I've done more after having kids because I'm more motivated. Yeah. Like,
I feel like it's shifted because you know kind of what they like. And I feel like it gets me more excited about projects because I know what they like, you know, what he's watching. And I'm like, oh yeah, this show. All right.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a fun age too. Because how old is yours now?
He's five.
Five, yeah. The demographic is shifting. So there's not as much, I don't feel like there's as much work in cartoons as there was 10 years ago, but there, and I say cartoons as like target demographic, like 7 to 11, and that demo doesn't exist anymore. It's like 6 to 9. Kids age out so fast. And so I feel like there's more preschool stuff than ever. So that's kind of neat for me. Or that's kind of neat for me where what the age of my kids are at, or at least my daughter is at, is because she can watch my stuff. Like I couldn't really show her the stuff I was doing on Disney or Nickelodeon. It's just a little bit too old for her. There's some scary stuff and some potty humor she doesn't need to see, but I'm in just a bunch of preschool stuff. So I can just go, she doesn't understand, but it's kind of fun for me to be creating content that my kid can enjoy, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, it'll be great when she does understand, and you'll become like the rock star at her elementary school.
No. Come on. You know, kids don't work that way. Everything you think is cool, they're going to be embarrassed of. It's like, oh, my dad's a cartoon. But yeah, I don't know. Hopefully. We'll see.
Hopefully. I think it'll happen. I don't know.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
it kind of depends. Like, I don't know. I feel that the sons love their moms, and usually the little girls love their dads and look up to them.
I don't know. I can't tell. I'm pretty sure my son hates me. He's 6 months old and but I can't do anything for him. All I can do is like change his diaper and hang out with him. Dad is like fifth fiddle, lowest man on the podium.
No milk at the end of that tunnel.
No, exactly. I don't have what he needs.
You do not have what you want, sir.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah. I'm sure it's much different for a woman to be, you know, job as a mom, and then to also be trying to work at the same time. I can only imagine what that's like for shifting your career. But at the same time, you know, it's pretty, I think you can do it. I think you can do both. I had a really bad teacher once tell me, like, you know, once you have kids, you might as well give up your acting career. And that was like a theater teacher, and I shouldn't say teacher, it was a professor. Yeah, but I got their point. And you know, I'm creeping up on 40. So for me, it was sort of like, you know, okay, if I'm going to have kids, I need to pull the trigger. And I wonder if I'd had them when I was younger, if I would have been able to pursue the arts in the way that I did. I'm not exactly, sure if I would have. Though
you already had your footing.
Yeah.
You know?
But though I do have friends who did have children younger and did end up having a career in the arts. So it's hard to say, but I can't imagine it makes it any easier. Yeah.
Yeah. For anybody that's just tuning in, this is Allison's Wonderland. It's a weekly show where we interview people that work in animation and video games. So if you like it, you can subscribe. There's also a question box at the bottom. If you guys have questions for Robbie, we'll go ahead. We'll take some couple questions in like 10 minutes, and then we'll take some at the end. Is that okay with you?
Oh, I'm chilling. I'm just in my backyard hanging out, watching my dog.
I think I can hear birds like chirping in the background.
Oh, we have a big, huge, beautiful bougainvillea that's just full of birds. So hopefully it's pleasant. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I haven't done one of these outside in a while. The last time I did, the mosquitoes, I was like getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. So
it's getting to be dusk. I'm sure they'll be out for me soon enough, but right now we're safe. I've got long pants on.
Nice. If we see you starting to go like this. So can you talk more about Lava?
Oh, yeah. So LAVA is an acronym for loud, annoying, and very annoying. Just a stupid.
Is that the three of you?
It is the three of us. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. And yeah, we never tell who's who. But this came about 5 years ago. I started working with Ray Chase and Max Middleman, two other voice actors. I just had a great rapport with them right away. And we also happened to take note that we were in a ton of stuff together. Yeah. So I had been doing conventions for about a year or so, and was sort of watching what was going on out there. And if I'm being 100% honest, I was like, I don't know if this is like, I enjoy the con scene, but I just wanted to do something different and special and bring a little bit more entertainment value to wherever I went. Mm-hmm. So I talked to the guys and I was like, well, hey, you guys have their theater degrees and they're both from UCLA. And I said, do you have any improv background? They both did. And I was like, what if we did like a nerd culture sort of themed variety show with improv comedy show for these conventions, and we packeted ourselves as a trio? And to my knowledge, nobody had really done this. Like, I kind of like Johnny Young Bosch used to bring his band out. I think he still does sometimes. And some people have like some gigs and some gimmicks that they do, but like nothing really like this. So that was my idea, was to bring this show out. And I'm super glad I did, because I don't really do shows by myself anymore. Not that I couldn't, but I would
say, conventions, you mean?
Yeah, 95% of the conventions that I do are with the guys. And it's worked out. So, and I wouldn't want to do it any other way now, because it's so much fun. We get to do this show that we absolutely love and bring this sort of like added value to the cons, because we do the show for free. And we just say, okay, but you bring us out as your guests, and we'll give you that content. And it's an absolute blast. So anybody who's come to one of the shows, I think they all know, like, it ends up being like one of the most raucous sort of fun things that we do. And then we send a little merch, and then we go crash at our hotel and sleep, and then wake up the next day and go try to entertain again. So yeah, it's really fun. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so fun. You're like constantly on tour with your besties.
Yeah, it's great. And they're both such good guys. And, you know, I also bring my wife and my kids out whenever they want to come, if it's a city they want to go to. And Ray's wife, Julia, is amazing. She comes out with him pretty much everywhere. And then we have extra seats. You know, Max will bring some family, or will bring some family. And it's just kind of like a fun sort of family affair that we all have. And it's really a blast. So as far as the UK goes, I was seeing somebody talk, that's definitely in the cards, like super soon, but we're not allowed to talk about anything until like it's official on their end. So we got some big things planned now that the world's sort of getting back. Hey, Annie, how's it going?
do you have any lava shows officially booked that you can shout out?
Yeah, we've got four this year. But not until fourth quarter. I think that's, we wanted to sort of wait and see how things are. Yeah. We had some offers for the summer and third quarter, but so in October, we'll be in Fort Worth. And then in November, we will be in New York at Anime NYC. And then we will be in Layton, Utah in December. No. Oh, I'm getting these mixed up. We're going to be in Utah. Oh, that's right. Utah is in October. Fort Worth is in December. New York is in November. And then we'll be at Anime Pasadena here in LA in December again. But that is a nice sort of soft warm in for us. And we'll see what the vibe is like out there. And then 2022, we plan on being out there crushing it. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Lava fans on the stream.
Brian's screaming for help for some reason. I hope you're okay.
I know.
Hi, I noticed you, Strawberry Bunny.
Well, do you want to take a couple questions right now?
Yeah, I recognize a lot of names. So this, we got some crossover here. But yeah, I'll answer questions. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, this is probably not something that you can speak to, but there was a couple questions regarding Spider-Man and if it's coming back.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, there's one right there. That one, I'll just say, I'm not allowed to say anything, but I feel like the three seasons that we did wrapped up in a very nice way and left possibilities for the future, including your imagination. So take that however you take it. But I'm not currently.
Season four is in your mind.
It is, perhaps, but that's not official coming from me. They did just release a brand new trailer for a new preschool show called Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends that I am not in, but once they show the cast, you'll see why. It's super cute, the things that they've got coming out. So yeah, it's exciting.
Awesome. That's adorable.
Yeah.
Somebody's asking, and this is a good question, other than Tuxedo Mask, what's your favorite roles?
Of course, Sailor Mikey. Sailor Mikey would assume that Tuxedo Mask is my favorite role. And he's right. It's my first anime role. Some of my favorites, oh man, favorites is such a hard question. Right now I'm really enjoying working on this comedy show with some of the creators of Pinky Malinky and a few other shows that I did that is as of yet unannounced, but I'm having a blast working with them. It's a comedy show. That's where my heart lies. Breadwinners is one of my all-time favorites just because of the cast and how wacky it was and that we got to do songs every time. Let's see. Costume Quest was one of my favorite cartoons that I worked on. As far as anime goes, I'm really enjoying Jujutsu Kaisen right now. That's like one of my most enjoyable roles that I'm working on. I had a fun time on Kuroko's Basketball. Tuxedo Mask is up there. And obviously some of my absolute favorites are Prompto from Final Fantasy 15, Akechi from Persona 5, Hubert from Fire Emblem, and most recently Tuesday. I'm the main bad guy in the new Guilty Gear game. And that one, they kind of just let me go off the rails and sort of do my thing. So it was really fun. Yeah.
Can you test that out? Can we hear what it sounds like?
Oh yeah. He's just sort of like, he started out as like sort of a bad joker. And then as it went, he just derailed more and more into this almost like a bad Christopher Walken, where he's pausing in everything he does. And I just kind of put it all in my nose and did some rasp and dropped it in. And he's a total psychopath. So it was fun. And the further and further I took it, expecting them to rail me in, they never did. So I was just kind of like, all right, let's see how far we can go. So it was super fun.
That sounds so fun. Have you gotten a chance to work with some of your favorite directors?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the saddest things about my career is never getting to work with Andrea Romano. It never happened. And we, you know, crossed paths a million times. Like, I was on one of her shows, but she wasn't there that day. And, you know, she had cast me, but she wasn't directing. And then she retired. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that ship sailed. But yeah, I mean, I have lots of favorites out there. You know, one of the interesting things about voice directors is it's kind of a female dominated field. There are, you know, a couple of men out there, but a lot of the top casting directors and voiceover directors are women. And I think that's one of those little known facts that I think is so interesting about voiceover, is that, you know, in entertainment, which can be so male dominated sometimes women have really taken over the reins. And, you know, every year it seems like it's a female winner for a director or casting director. But yeah, I mean, obviously Meredith Lane is a longtime friend and one of my favorites. And, you know, I remember her when she was over at Nickelodeon, Colette Sunderman. I mean, you know, there's a million great directors out there, and I like them all. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems, and casting directors in general too are often women. And it seems like a lot of times people move up to voice directing from the casting world. So maybe that's the natural evolution.
I think so. I think that's what happened with quite a few people that I knew. Of course, Christy Reed, she's amazing. Oh my God. Chris Salter, she's amazing. Yeah. I have a theory, but I'm scared to say it. But my theory is that in general, women tend to excel better at interpersonal relationships. Like, I just think they typically are just better at it. And I think it requires, I think handling actors who tend to be, I'm talking mad generalizations now, actors who tend to be a little bit more of a sensitive group, myself excluded, I'm pretty tough.
Of course.
But to handle those egos and those fragile egos requires a sort of a deft and delicate touch. And I think women excel at that. Yeah. But that's just my opinion. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a pretty, I think at least 50% of the population will probably agree with you.
And people are naming them. Linda LaFontaine, Jenny McSwain was one of the first people to ever hire me. I can't believe I'm not forgetting people. There's too many to name, but Jenny was, instrumental in, she put me in my first cartoon, and she's, you know, one of the absolute OGs. Lisa Schaefer, unbelievably amazing. We've worked together. I mean, I've worked with all of these people. So, you know, and I can honestly say, like, I just don't, there's just no negative experiences to be had. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're fantastic.
It's an industry with a lot of amazing people.
Yeah. Do you want to see my puppy? Zelda, come here. Do you want to come up
here?
Yeah,
let's see.
Come here, Zelda. Oh, she hates me. Look, she's like, forget that. I'm not coming over. That's hurtful. That's hurtful. Rejected by my own dog. Mary Elizabeth McGlenn, one of my favorites. We worked together on Chico Bon Bon. She directed me for like 52 episodes of that. She's also an old-time friend. I first met her on the convention scene, and then we ended up working together. Oh, wow. Wendy Lee. I mean, really, yeah. Well, we're really proving the point here by all the names in the chat. But yeah. Sarah Sherman, guys, you're crushing it. These are all the best of the best. Nice. Oh, of course, it's Jeff. He knows.
Yes, of course. And
Peyton says you're looking beautiful tonight, Allison, which is absolutely true. Of course, as per usual. I was watching you and your dude do your, what do you call that? Is that duet acrobatic
acro
yoga?
What is it? It's acro yoga.
Fill me in. How did that? How did that come about?
Oh my gosh, you and your wife should try it.
I'm terrified. She'd be great.
It's really fun. I mean, it's yoga, but you're doing it with a partner. So it's less strength-based and more skill-based. So it takes a while to learn. But, you know, basically a lot of times you're looking for bone stack or you're moving through. Now we're starting to do more like flow stuff, which has been really great. But
sure.
It keeps us connected and we have to talk through things. And because we're both learning together at the same pace, it's extra challenging because, you know, if I ever fly with my instructor, you know, it looks like it looks totally different because he knows exactly what to do and how to hold those poses. So us learning together is like, it's a challenge that I think really helps our relationship grow.
Yeah. That's what it seems like. It seems like you'd have to, there's a certain level of trust there required between each other. Yeah. And that, yeah, that's awesome to see. I really enjoy it. Yeah, it's cool.
My
wife has, that's what she does for a living. She has multiple Pilates and yoga certifications. She has her she has her biomechanics certifications. Before we had kids, she was coaching and training NFL and NBA players on their off season, their strength and conditioning, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, I mean, she did that.
You trust her? No, just kidding.
Oh,
those big burly NFL guys.
Of course. I always used to joke. And they're like, no, they're like children. She's like, especially the NBA guys. They're babies. They're 17. But yeah, I would go in there and she tells a great story about, you know, she was leading them through something and they were asking about like inversions and handstands and stuff. And she's like, well, I'm going to tell you, I could tell you, show you how to do it. And they're like, yeah, sure. And they're like, oh, and she's like, you know, imagining, you know, $1 million insurance policies on these guys. So anyway, she starts to show them all how to do headstands. And all of a sudden there's like, 15 300-pound men just crashing over onto their backs, laughing about having what fun it is. But meanwhile, she's
everywhere.
She's muscles. Terrified. Yeah. but no, yeah. So anyway, yeah, I'm sure she'll get back to that at some point. She's starting to take on a few clients here and there.
Yeah.
But
we definitely
took
a break after we had our kid because it was hard to find time. But I guess that's one of the gifts of the pandemic.
Totally.
Finally had some lockdown time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think some good can come out of it. It was a horrible thing that, there's the mosquito. It was a horrible thing that we were all sort of had to deal with together. But I think a lot of people found a way to make the best of it. For me, it was, you know, spending time with my daughter and taking care of my wife when she was pregnant and those things were kind of invaluable, but the rest of it, I'll pass. No thanks. I'll just take the one.
Timing wise, I mean, I guess what a blessing, huh? Because those are the formative years that like your daughter's, will she remember it? she'll remember the feeling forever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, well, I got to be with my wife the entire time she was pregnant.
Yeah.
I got to experience those precious years of like a 2-year-old, which are kind of amazing. Like those last years, I mean, they're growing and they're doing all this stuff and they need so much and they're growing so fast. It was good to have two parents there. And then I got to experience the first 6 months of my boy at home. And typically you're not going to get like, you know, 6 months maternity leave to be with your kids or a year to be with your kids. So yeah, that was really special. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rohan is a big boy. He's the fattest boy. He's a chunker.
That's your son's name?
Rohan. He is in the 90th, high 90 percentiles for everything. Head, weight, length. He's a literal monster. He's like 19 pounds and he's 5 months old. He's a destroyer of worlds. I don't know what to do with him. I don't know where I'm going to put him. He's a monster. Yeah.
Well, you're over 6 feet, right?
I'm 6 foot on the nose, but Megan
really?
And I
you seem
are,
even taller than that.
Oh, thanks. It's just
you're like a tall 6 feet.
Oh, it's the hat. It's tricky. Hat. Yeah, we've got some big ones in our family. So it looks like he drew that. It looks like he drew that genetic lottery. Yeah. It's a big
hit. Chompy babies are the cutest. Oh,
what's up? What's up, Vernon? A lot of familiar faces in here.
I'm curious. You had a post a couple weeks, months, who knows, how long ago, talking about social media and how you're doing a lot less on social media.
Yeah.
I know you just joined TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, what's your relationship like to social media these days?
Oh, man. Healthier. I think before I was like a little bit too wrapped up in it, like for finding my validation, especially during COVID. Like in the early stages of COVID, I was sort of using it as an outlet in sort of an unhealthy way to interact with people. And I feel like I'm an extrovert in general, but yeah. So now, even though I still interact, I've definitely like cut way back. I'm trying to do sort of like a post and forget it sort of routine. I'm not the best at it. Like I still like to interact, but instead of like, I was never like that obsessed with the interactions and likes and shit per se, but it was more like I was interested in what people were saying. And I kind of had to divorce myself from that after I had a couple of like negative interactions that like sort of got to me. And as I get a little older and more like empathetic, I'm feeling more sensitive about things. Yeah. And then I'm realizing like, well, I would never engage with these people in real life who are coming to me in bad faith. Why am I choosing to do it in a digital space? So it's not that I'm like unconcerned with criticism. Like if there's valid criticism to be had, I'm going to listen to that and interact with it in the same way. But people who just come to you in bad faith and are looking to snipe at you or take shots at you. I feel like social media is kind of set up to do that, to sort of empower the people that are feeling disempowered, which can be a good thing for people who are disenfranchised and trying to make a difference in the world. But when it comes to someone who has any level of status, whether it be, you know, you're jealous of someone who has 1,000 followers or 50 or 500,000 or 5 million, it's a way for someone who feels like they don't have that to take jabs at someone. And if they do it in the right way, it can be hurtful to everyone involved. So I had a couple of those things happen, things that made me uncomfortable, like message DMs that I got that were like, and I don't reply to most of them, but that just made me uncomfortable and mean and things like that. And I was just like, oh, well, that's a bummer. So maybe if I just only engage with the people who come to me in good faith and cut everybody else out, but still be able to listen to criticism, then I'll have a healthier relationship with social media. And that's pretty much what it was for me. So, yeah.
Hey guys, this is Allison Packard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know that if you like the show, please, please, please remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
You know, that's actually, I've heard that from a few different voice actors about sort of them reaching this level of exposure that makes them almost a little bit more susceptible, because if you have, you know, 50,000 followers, then you have 50,000, you know, people, many of whom you, more and more people you don't know, and there could be more exposure.
What's that statistic? Like one in every 100 person is a psychopath, right? So let's pretend
that's real.
It's real. So let's pretend that's real. And then let's say that one in every 1,000 of those, and I believe this is also what was said, is that as people that will act on that, right? And then one in every 10,000 is someone that will act on it in a malicious way. So if you have, let's say my number, you have 70,000 followers, that means you have got 700 psychopaths, 70 of them who are willing to interact in it with them, and 7 that could be super dangerous. And when I say psychopaths, I mean, not just like, that doesn't mean like a bad person necessarily. You could just have whatever going on in your life and never interact with it. Like, I'm definitely not like, you know, being tough on mental illness by any means, but like I've had people, Zelda, stop. I've had people threaten to kill me over an anime that I've voiced, which is like multiple times. People who've written me emails saying that they want to do bad stuff to my family or make inappropriate comments about my wife and my kids. And for me, now that I have a family, that was something that really woke me up and made me go, okay, well, I need to make sure that those people out there. And there are so many ways now with social media that you can't protect yourself. And there are so many ways that, like, if you encounter one bad person and become the focus of their malicious intent, that they could, and this got serious for a second, but they can say anything they want or do anything they want on the internet with no repercussions. Yeah. Like, you could say anything about anyone, And it sort of may do whatever it does. It's like a high school rumor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not to say that, like, you know, and I've known people that have been the target of that. And it's sort of, it's tough because there's nothing you can do about it, because the instant that you were to engage with it, you give it validity. So you just kind of have to sit there and go, okay, this bad person just said a terrible thing about me. And like, we're like, okay, like here's 5,000 Spider-Man fans who are shitting on me for no reason because they're taking something that I said out of context. So it's like, so you just go, okay, well, there's 5,000 people that don't like me now. And there's one person out there that's trying to actively hurt me. And all I want to do is like make cartoons and support my family. Yeah. So like the digital space is like a really weird sort of place right now. So yeah, you just kind of go, okay. Like, it's not meant to be like a pity party. I'm very grateful to have, like, I wouldn't trade all the people that I get to interact with for, like, just because there's a couple of, you know, bad eggs out there. But it does make you go, oh, is social media even worth it? You know? And these days, when you're making your own content and it's part of the job now, it's sort of unavoidable. Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. And how many of those people are actually accounts that the one crazy guy has made seven of?
Sure.
And those 5,000, you know, people are really just 1,000 and one guy that's, you know, gone crazy. Yeah. It's like, you can't put too much stock in that.
And I can't even, I know we've talked a little bit, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a woman, LGBTQ, or any person that tends to get targeted more, because my female friends who are any sort of influencer or voiceover people, wow, the stories they tell me about the things that they get in their DMs and the horrific things people say. I understand my privilege of being a man and you know, that comes with its own set of problems, but like nothing compared to what some women in the business go through. It's totally wild, but you know, I do think that those good people, I was saying exactly what Trombone Stabby is saying. I do think that the good people outweigh the bad. And if you've accumulated enough social credit and you've proven yourself to be a good person, then I think you're shielded against most of those few bad people out there. But overall, I think in order to have a healthy relationship with social media, a friend of mine told me, only engage with people that come to you in good faith. And it's something that I've been doing for the past year or 6 months ago since I made that post. And it's changed completely how I deal with social media. So, yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I took I was off for 14 months, just completely off. I originally got off to have more time to focus on like a short-term creative project I was working on.
Sure.
And then I just didn't want to get back on. And it's sort of like, that's not the solution either, especially not now when this is becoming more and more of our work. But if you are a digital hermit, you know, you're just kind of removing that piece altogether. And then, you know, eventually it's like,
I think all media right now is transitioning to sort of the podcast model that's been around for, you know, 15, 20 years, and that it's going directly to the consumer, you know? Wow. So, and I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing, but in order for that to happen, you have to have a rapport with them and a relationship with them somehow.
And with your audience.
With your audience. So if I'm making you content for free and you choose to engage in my content, and then I offer you a way to support me, whether it be through, you know, a Twitch subscription or a t-shirt or an autograph, you know, at a convention or some way for you to say, hey, I appreciate your work or I appreciate the things that you do. That's, for me, is a really positive relationship. And you can't foster those opportunities to give that entertainment to your fans and allow them to support you without having a platform. So, you know, that's why I was resistant to like TikTok for, you know, 2 years. I was like, ah, TikTok's for kids. It's silly. And I was like, okay, Max, I made one. I was like, all right, I'll make one. And then, you know, I got, you know, more followers on TikTok in a week than I've had on Twitter in 12 years. So
1.5 million views on your video, I think I was looking at the other day.
Yeah, but that's nothing compared to, that's where all of the main consumers of anime and video games and cartoons are now. They're younger. They're all on they're all on TikTok. And
it's very cool to see.
Well, you know what? And what I like about it so far is that it really is a post it and forget it sort of thing. You make a little piece of content, you put it out there, the algorithm takes over, and you just sort of, you know, you just sort of put it out there, and people get to enjoy it. And that's the vibe. Like, my wife has been on TikTok since the beginning. She's like, I don't post anything. I just love it. I read mom stuff and recipes and workout stuff and business stuff. And that's how I enjoy it. So, and then I went on and I was like, oh, the vibe on here is much better than, say, you know, Twitter, where I love Twitter. It's like my biggest platform. Well, not anymore, but it seems like it's set up to like argue, like that negativity is sort of inherent there. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Each one has its own little vibe. Like each one is like your friend, and like Instagram, she's like the popular girl that like just cares about like what you look like. And Twitter's like the gossip. Like, did you hear what they said? And then like, I don't know, TikTok's just like your best goofy bestie or something.
Yeah.
That's like always trying to act silly. I don't know.
It's just people dancing and lip syncing and making creative content. I used to love Vine. Like, I grew up on Vine.
Yes, me too.
I feel like it's got a nice Vine vibe. You know, people are actually making content. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty so cool. Fun. Yeah, we're actually going to try out like a new Wonderland After Dark kind of thing. I'm going to test it out tonight with John Bailey. We'll see.
Yeah, have fun.
Go and have a drink. Well, maybe not, because what's the age? It's like, I think my average age is like 14 over there or something.
Over where? On TikTok?
The fans. It's young. Excuse young.
My content is completely clean on, but I have a pretty clean, I will say like the occasional like dirty word or whatever, but like I don't really post not safe for work stuff. Like I have a pretty clean vibe. Like occasionally I'll curse. That's about it. We do our 18 plus lava show and it's literally like a little bit of gross out humor, the opportunity to say the F word. And there's a part of me where I'm just like, this isn't really an 18 plus show. There's nothing like inherently like sexual about it or anything like that.
Yeah.
But there is some stuff that where if you don't call it an 18 plus show, like I remember one time, like a kid, like a 12-year-old came with their mom and somehow got past security. And we're in the middle of doing this bit in the show. And I see like a 12-year-old out there and I'm like, get this, what are we doing? Get this kid out of here. This is a not for a child. So it's like, you know, 17 plus. Yeah, that's closer. But yeah.
Well, I guess that's up to their parents. Their parents should know what they're getting into.
But like, it's not an R-rated movie, you know, it's like a live show, which makes us an active participant. But we got a big disclaimer before our show and all of that stuff, so everybody feels like they're in a safe space. But I think today, this day and age, you need to do that, because whether you like the culture shift that we're going through or not, you still have to respect it. You still have to honor it. And you have to realize that people expect those things now. So when we do our live shows, we always make sure that it's a safe space for everybody. And there's no judgment if something somebody's triggered or makes them feel strange or wants to go. I think that's the only way that like comedy can move forward with in this day and age, but which is just by honoring and respecting your audience, which isn't that hard if you do it the right way. Yeah. As long as the discourse is responsible. Yeah.
I love that. And so Twitch, Lava also has is it weekly, the Twitch component?
Yeah, we were really not great at being regular about it before COVID, and we will continue to be regular about it now. It put us in a good mode, but we stream together once a week and we do it over Zoom and it's just audio. It used to be all of us over at my home studio and we would be on camera, but obviously that's not doable for COVID. But we reliably streamed all the way through quarantine once a week on Wednesdays, and we've got this great little fam. It's the same 300 to 500 people that show up every single time, and with some new blood coming in every time, and they're incredibly generous and kind and have formed this little community, and it's continued to grow. It used to be, you know, 30 or 40, and now, you know, it's 10 times that, and we hope to continue to slowly grow it. But it's more about just coming together. It also keeps us sharp, it keeps us funny, it allows us to continue to riff and be together. And this weekend, we're doing something insane that we've joked about for 2 years. We started Persona, the game, and just couldn't finish it. And we joked about doing it all at once in like a nonstop marathon stream.
Oh my God.
So this weekend, starting at 9 a.m. over at Max's house, we've been setting it up for the last 2 weeks. We are going to stream together for 72 hours straight and try and finish the game from 9 a.m. Friday to 9 a.m. on Monday morning. We're going to sleep over. We're going to eat there. We're not going to leave the apartment. We're going to take turns sleeping? Playing. I agreed to be the sacrifice to be the sleep cam. as long as there's no audio because I talk in my sleep, we're good to go. So we're going to do the whole thing. It's going to be a crazy experiment, but tomorrow we'll put out the schedule. We've got guests from the game coming over, and we partnered with Atlas, the company, and they sent us a bunch of merch. So we're doing like giveaways every hour on the hour. Atlas, they make the game. They made the game Persona. Oh, they distribute it. And they're the producers. And so they were like, "Oh, we're doing this thing. Will you retweet it and send us some stuff?" So they sent us a bunch of stuff. So yeah,
nice.
It's going to be a really bizarre weekend, but it's sort of it's the first time we'll be all together on camera. It's kind of our way of saying like, okay, you know, we're back. We're ready to sort of, you know, get back into this world and enjoy it. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Aw, tell Max I said hi. He was one of my guests many years ago when this show was just a podcast.
We talked about it. Yeah.
And recorded it here.
Yeah. I told him you're doing it. I was like, yeah, he's, we talked about it. So I was like, yeah, I did that. She's like, she's the best. I was like, yeah, of course. Like I'm going to level with you. I have a hard standing no for all like podcasts Wednesday. Like this. No, just all of them. I've said no, like all for all of COVID for like eight. I did. Oh no, that's a lie. I did one because she was a Native American podcaster. And we were covering something like really topical at the time. And then I did one for Black Lives Matter that I hosted. But outside of that, I haven't done like a single podcast. It's all been media requests or like stuff like that. But when you asked me, I said yes, because you exude a super positive energy and I knew it would be fun. I'm glad to talk to you for an hour for sure. Yeah.
Aw, thanks, Robbie. So glad to have you on. I've had a lot of requests. So
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. So we've talked a lot about the business, but what other hobbies do you have that keep you inspired?
That's crazy. Everything's focused around my kids right now. Like I've become the world's biggest, nerdiest dad in the world. Like I love being a dad. I always thought I would, but when I have time for myself, I do like to play a little music. I play guitar. I've always been a singer and that's kind of like, I used to, I've written plenty of stuff. Now it's just, I'd rather just hop on ultimate guitar and like play a song I don't know and sing a little bit. That's kind of like my zen time. I don't really play as much video games as I used to. I used to play a lot, but I felt like it became kind of a time suck. And outdoor wise, I love to hike. I've been hiking a lot lately. I've hiked a lot for the last 20 years, but COVID sort of rekindled my passion for it. So I've been doing the SoCal Six Pack, the highest six peaks in Southern California. So I've done four of the six. I did Mount San Jacinto Sunday, so my legs are a little sore. But
that's no joke.
Yeah, it's fun. We're gonna do San Gorgonio at the end of the summer, and that one's a 20 miler hike in, hike out. So that's a real one. That's like almost 12,000 feet. It's like 11,000 and some change. But yeah, it's really fun. But I also own three companies, our Lava company, a production studio, and then another company that we're going to launch sometime later this year. And so that just sort of dominates
mystery company.
My time. Yeah.
Is it related to sort of like VO adjacent or?
Now, the second one, no. The second one is just a straight businessman. But our production company is a video game production company. So we have two games in production right now that are obviously, you know, unannounced. But we'll probably be announcing one of them around third quarter this year once we drop our trailer. And then second one we've been working on for two years. It's got a vertical. Our vertical slice is done and our pitch is ready. We're just sort of waiting for when people are comfortable to be in the room together. We don't want to do like Zoom pitches just because whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're just trying to make stuff happen. Yeah. Yeah. So we've got two games now. Yeah.
That's amazing. I know. Seeing all these eyes pop up in the timeline. I don't know if it's just people are curious or.
Yeah. Those are the curious eyes. Yeah. So, but like.
Well, I know we're running up. And so do you have your Twitch tonight too?
No, we're taking the night off because of our big long one that starts on Friday morning. So we're we don't need to streak this week. Yeah.
We timed this perfectly, actually.
Yeah. We have extra time if you want to talk about anything else or field any more questions. But
I'd love to take some more questions from the audience. So go ahead and type them in the box, you guys. If anybody just tuned in, the show is called Allison's Wonderland. It's an interview IGTV show that is also repurposed as a podcast, which is why I'm not constantly just saying words out to everybody on the stream. But I want you to know that I'm so grateful to everybody that tuned in live because that's the most fun part. So
it fields the questions too. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. I see. That's a very interesting. Sailor Mikey asked another interesting question, which is, what is your most obscure role?
Ooh, obscure? Oh my goodness. Let's see. Lately I with the that's so hard. Obscure. Like I've done so much stuff that you've never heard because I also do commercials. So so that's another thing where it's just like I consider that obscure. I consider that sneaky.
What do you have any campaigns or commercials that would be shot?
What am I doing right now? I've been doing the Extremes Almonds. I did a bunch of those. I was doing the syndicated cut down for Two Broke Girls for promos. Oh God, so many commercials, stuff on there. Like every once in a while, I'll be in a chat and someone's like, did I hear on the radio? I was like, I don't know, probably. like who's to say? But got early on in my career, very, very, very early before I went union, like 2008, 2009, I did a fair amount of like Korean MMORPGs and like mobile games and stuff like that. So if you really dig back into my IMDb, you'll find some stuff where you'll be like, whoa, weird. So, but anyway, yeah, I can't think of one right off the top of my head because it's obscure.
Somebody needs to slice all those together into some grand. That's your next tip.com.
I think that's my demo. Yeah. I think it's all just spliced together. I'll just do an obscure demo.
All commercials are obscure. It's kind of funny. Not if you ask the boomers.
That is true. The boomers know. But also people don't realize that like for a while, not as much so these days, but like commercials were like bread and butter and the theatrical stuff was just for fun. But yeah, I don't know.
Now a lot of commercials are digital. The biggest role seems to be digital in that. Certainly.
I think you and I could talk for a long time about the shifting VO market, but that probably
would bore the heck out of you guys.
Bore them to death.
Question from Jeff. What's your biggest takeaway from recording from home over the past year?
Personally, that something I already knew is that I am an extrovert and I need people. Yeah. I've always been that way. I'm a people person. Can you finally relax? Come up here. Come on.
Is that your dog?
Come say hi. What do you got on your face? Hi. She's a big girl.
Zelda.
She's a big chunky girl. Can you say hi?
What kind of dog is it? Oh.
She is a big old pity. She's about 80 pounds of just sweet love. Come here. Yeah. She, or what were we saying? Oh, what were we talking about? Oh, to what we were learning from a recording at home. Is that I love people, and that is my favorite part of that's my favorite part of the job.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the creative part of it, but I love the people part even more than that. Like I didn't realize how much I missed it until COVID came and I was like, please. So I like everybody, I had waves of, you know, being depressed and figuring out like what life is like. And thankfully I had a family to keep me grounded. But one thing I did for quite a while is that I turned on my camera even when people didn't ask me to. So if I had a Zoom set, I would find that most people I would find that most people would have their cameras off in sessions because they probably, let's be fair, they probably look like shit. They probably felt like shit. Nobody wants to see anybody. And I was finding that I was not behaving in the booth the same way I would behave at a session. I would like, you know, let's say I'm getting frustrated and the director gives me a piece of direction I don't like, you know, I'd be like, oh, come on, that was great. What are you talking about? You know, like I was getting negative and like expressing that because I knew they couldn't see me. And this is very
painting
candid.
Painting your nails.
I'm usually pretty good at staying distracted, but like I look at my phone more. all of that stuff than I would in a normal session and in between takes and all that stuff. And at a certain point, I was like, I am just going to start turn the camera on, which requires me to put myself together, you know, and then I found I would behave more like I was in the room. So I did that for quite a while until I didn't need to anymore, until it just kind of became old hat. Yeah.
It's so interesting because I am the same. I'm total extrovert, and that, you know, there's so many days now that I don't leave my yard. I don't leave my house. I'm just like here and I just miss people. But I even find, as Zoom is like such a great substitute, but the lack of eye contact, the fact that like, if I'm looking at you, I'm here. But if I'm like, want to make eye contact with you, I need to look at the camera. That is just such a weird disconnect.
It is not how we are. We are social hairless monkeys who are meant to interact with each other and touch each other. And human existence is supposed to be tactile and face to face. And we are not built to observe and interact with the world through a screen, period. I don't believe that. I really don't believe
that.
I don't know how old you are, nor dare would I ask. But for me, sort of an elder millennial, I remember a time when that wasn't the case. The internet only, you know, just 20 years ago, it was, you know, an occasional chat room and a few emails and whatever. And there was no video conferencing, none of that. But I'm also grateful for it because it allowed me to work during COVID. And a lot of my actor friends who aren't in voiceover didn't have that privilege. They just spent 18 years or 18 months not working, which, you know, my accountant will be the first one to tell you, you know, you got UVO people were lucky because you just kind of marched on. So, and we did, we marched on. And like today we were looking at an office space and we were all masked up and the real estate agent reached out to shake my hand. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess we're shaking hands now. And I was like, cool. And it felt great. I was like, hell yeah, I'll shake my hand. Like, you know.
And then you were like,
yeah, right. He seemed nice. He seemed pretty clean. I definitely washed my hands. But then, you know, we had a little backyard birthday get together. Everybody was vaccinated and it felt strangely normal, you know, but I think everybody's going to have a little bit of like social PTSD for the next for the next few months as the world sort of folds itself.
I believe the term is physically distanced, socially awkward.
That might be right. Yeah. That might be absolutely right.
Hey, it's good to see. Are we hugging? Are we not hugging?
I think the elbow bump is still super. I think that's still friendly enough, but you get a little skin on skin.
What are you drinking, by the way?
Apple juice. Of course, it's apple juice. Of course.
I was thinking you were having a nice glass of scotch.
I am. It's a Macallan 18 apple juice.
You're a man after my own heart, I gotta say.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I have been working my ass off since 8 o'clock this morning. So I was like, I'm definitely going to have a little happy hour with Allison.
I knew I would have grabbed my mechanic. I don't know if I did.
You got to bust it out every once in a while. That said, that was another challenge of COVID is to make sure I think a lot of people were self-medicating during that time. And you know, you hear those jokes and stuff. And like, I took it as the opportunity the other way. I was like, all right, I'm going to come out of this. I'm going to lose some LBs. I'm going to get my shit together because I've got no excuse. Like it was like being locked in prison. And what do you do when you're in prison? You better work out. So I built this big, huge home gym that I love and that like, you know, dropped 30 pounds and like, you know, did the best I could with it. But it's definitely like, now that the world's coming back, I'm like, oh, stay on track, dummy. You know,
make sure restaurants are open again.
Restaurants are open again.
Mixed drinks.
I'm still freaked out about eating inside. I've been dining al fresco for, you know, a year and a half and I love it. So I don't know if I want to do anything else.
There's plenty of opportunity. I mean, pretty much every restaurant still has that option, right? So.
Yeah. Official Rejectorado, you're working on Grease. Are you crewing it? Are you in it? Are you chorus? Are you? And Vernon, I know, Vernon, you have been having a little bit of whiskey. You look good when I saw you, though, buddy. You look good. You look lean and mean, so it's not affecting you too much. But anyway, yeah, it's definitely been a weird time. And I don't know. I think my big takeaway from working from home was that I was grateful to be doing it, but it is not my preferred way. And now that things seem safe, I'm ready to get back in the studio. I had an in-studio session last week, and it was my first one. But the production crew was still on Zoom. So I went into a studio. The engineer was there, but everybody was on Zoom. And I was just like, okay, I guess we're still not quite there yet. We're getting there. We're getting there.
And you still had to drive.
Yeah. But it was nice to not have to worry about my recording on my end or any of that stuff. So.
And you got to see, you got to hang with the engineer at least.
No, it's a good experience. I'm ready to go back. I think I will go back anytime someone asks me from now on. Yeah.
Axel Bloom has a great question. And this is a question I do love to ask voiceover actors. What is your preparation like when you get to prepare specifically for a role for animation or video game? A character.
Yeah. I think that really depends on how much I'm given. So I will prep just about as much as I'm given. And I don't usually ask for extra information unless it's offered. And if it is, I'll take it. What I think a lot of people don't realize that might be theater actors or traditional actors is that we aren't given that much time to prep, nor are we given that much material to prep. So I think one of the most valuable skills you can have as a voice actor is really fast script analysis, almost to the point of instantaneous script analysis. I wouldn't quite call it cold reading because you're doing a little more than just cold reading to be able to look at a character and make evaluations and strong choices about that character right out of the gate, just from sort of a cursory glance over it, and then honing in on that as the session goes on. That's a skill that really doesn't pertain to any other form of acting that I can think of outside of maybe improv. But even then you're working off givens that you're creating for yourself in the moment. So that's not even the same, because with voiceover, you have to curtail the performance to fit within whatever parameters you're given. And sometimes those parameters are so loose
and
the script is loose. And sometimes you don't, unfortunately, there's sort of a range of quality that you're given depending on what you're going in and working on. Then there's some projects I'll go in and work on and I'll be like, oh, that was a dream. They knew the answer to every acting question that I asked, and I was given art and context and circumstance, and they had other characters queued up for me to work off of if I'm by myself. And then other times you go in and you're like, you're playing Joe, he's a plumber or something, good luck. And you're like, okay. And I'll read a dozen lines and try to figure out who Joe is in 2 minutes while we're getting ready to record. And I go, okay, I hope this is Joe. And then we work over it. And yeah. So yeah. But and other times you have, if you do something, maybe mocap or whatever, you have got a lot more time to prep. But other times you do something like PCAP where you're tethered and you're doing a line, not a line reading, but you have your script up there, and then they want you to do like an off book read. And I'll be off book on a 6-line sequence in 30 seconds. And that's only because my pedigree for doing it for a lifetime, and I think that's only because that's a skill set that I've evolved, that I don't know if I would have evolved having not been doing voiceover for 14 years. So yeah, it's wholly, that's why sometimes you can put an actor in the booth and they fall apart, and vice versa. You can put a voice actor in front of the camera, they can fall apart.
Have you been having fun with a lot of mocap stuff?
I'm not doing as much as I want. You're never doing as much as you want. It's my favorite. I play
is
like
it? Is it?
Yo, it's my favorite. Like if somebody were like,
I've never done mocap.
Oh my God. If someone were like, you don't have, I would cut out an entire section of my career and replace it with mocap in a heartbeat. If they're like, you never, we're going to do another commercial again, but you're going to replace it with mocap, I'd be like, yes. I think the only one I would maybe put it up against would be animation, because I love that so much. But I would give it all up to do that as much. So I've played the lead bad guy in a game, and then I've done about half a dozen, well, about four PCAP characters where you're tethered, where it's just the helmet and they're capturing just neck and above and you're on script. And then about two on set ones, and then the one the one big role. And when I say on set, I was on set a couple of times, a handful of times.
And so you need to be fully booked, fully off book for the mocap when you're on set?
It's just like being on set. Like for, yeah, you're fully off.
So
book.
Yes.
you're doing the scene work. You might as well be on a sound stage. So you might as well be on, and you are on camera. It's the exact same as being on a movie set or a TV
you
got
to be like fully off book, memorized and.
Yeah, good to go. And it's really enjoyable. Yeah. So,
you get the acting feels, all the feels.
Oh, yeah. And you get to do it a bunch. And there's care given to every scene because, you know, if you're in the sound space, if you're in the sound studio with, you know, $3 million worth of cameras over your head, all shooting, you know, 300 frames per second, and each camera is worth, you know, $50,000, you're not going to mess it up. You're going to keep doing it until you get it right. And that's really enjoyable for me. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a really fun experience. I also like when you're tethered for non-PCAP VO, like a lot more lately, I've been doing video games specifically where I'm just wearing a skull cap with a microphone here being tethered to the back, and I'm getting to like move and like act it out while having the script in front of me without having to deal with being in the confines of trying to hit the radius of a dynamic mic. And that's super fun too. Those are my preferred ways to record.
And you get to look like a bumblebee.
Yeah, just sort of buzzing around the studio. Yeah. But
somebody asked real quick, the Meg and Aang, how do you go about memorizing something with hundreds of hours of dialogue? Genuinely curious.
Oh, well, we don't memorize those. With hundreds of hours of dialogue, like something like Persona 5 or Final Fantasy 15 or a big game, we've got the script in front of us. And also, what people don't realize is that when these mocap games are being recorded as well, the stuff that is happening during the gameplay a lot of the times is recorded in a voiceover studio. So the script is there and all that stuff. But the cinematics and the live scenes and all of that stuff that you see that's face to face are going on, that will be PCAP. So maybe you do a bunch of them and then you have a handful of scenes or 50 scenes or 100 scenes, and you memorize those scenes the same way you memorize anything else. You know, you know what's coming up on your rehearsal schedule. You get off book. You have rehearsal time. You run it until it's perfect. It's very similar to anything you would do for film and television. Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
If I'm scoring a script, like in a traditional sense for something like that, and I've got something really beefy, I used to do, and I haven't done it in a long time, but I used to do the multicolored highlighter. So I'd get a, I'd get a highlighter pack with like 12 different colors in it. And then I would score the script by my beats and my actions. And then I would break them down into memorizable chunks and highlight those chunks. And there wouldn't be any particular order. It would just be different colors. And then I would associate that with what was coming next. And I would memorize the actions of the beats less than the words. And then I would associate those actions with the dialogue. This is some really nerdy ass theater pedagogy, but that was my preferred way. And I'm able to do that like really fast. Like if I scored my script appropriately and we had a 2-hour car ride and we had a 15-minute scene, I'll be off book by the time we get to where we're going. Like, yeah. So.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's just like competitive speech and like high school and like memorizing speeches and scenes and all that shit. Yeah.
Have you ever taught or do you have any aspirations to teach?
Yeah. So when I was in graduate school, we were not TAs, we were PTIs, which are part-time instructors. So we taught 100 through 400 level classes, so freshmen to seniors, majors and non-majors. So I taught scene study 1 through 4, Shakespeare 1 and 2, Modern Styles 1, and voice and speech. And then when I left grad school at 25, I stayed for an extra summer and taught the AP high school students that came in. And then I also taught the summer courses, which are mostly non-majors. So I taught theater history and seminar. And then when I moved out to LA, I taught at the New York Film Academy for about a year and a half or so. And I taught scene study and Shakespeare and voice. So like, I have a CV, but at the same time, I don't know. I think my career would have to take a turn, not necessarily for the worse, but like I would have to make a life change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I mean,
fit it in.
Yeah. And I don't think I would really want to do anything but teach at like the university level. Like, I mean, I can't see myself
at a high school. Coaching, one-on-one coaching or anything like that.
I mean, I feel like I could, but I don't necessarily, no, I respect people who can do that and have the fortitude for that. I guess, like, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could do it. I think if you were paying me to do that, I would need to know that you had the potential to succeed. And I don't think to do it as a profession. I know that sounds shitty to say, but like as a profession, I don't think I could take money from someone who I didn't think at least had a chance. But I don't think as a professional, you have the ability. You can say that. I don't think you can.
And you could be wrong, right?
And always you could be wrong.
Right.
I have to clarify that I was put on academic probation by my conservatory for my sophomore year of conservatory, and I failed voice and speech. That's how they got me.
No.
Oh, yeah, and that's why I transferred schools, because it wasn't the school for me.
Yeah.
I was the only person in the school that had my equity card. They weren't casting me in anything. So, and I wasn't getting respect. I was clashing with all the teachers, and then they put me on academic probation, and they had a cuts program, and they were preparing to cut me. Like, I knew that's what they were doing. So secretly, while they're preparing to cut me, I was touring around the country auditioning at every conservatory program in the country that whole year, as if I was a high school senior looking to transfer. And I did their cuts program, and they were like, I did juries, and they're like, well, we decided we're actually gonna have you stay. We're glad to keep you. And I was like, no thanks. I'm gonna go. So I left and transferred anyway, because I hated it. That school is a terrible school for me. I'm sure a lot of people had a great experience. It was a horrible school for me. And so I had plenty of people telling me this wasn't for me, especially the person that failed me in voice and speech. Fuck that guy. What's he doing now?
Look at me now.
the best revenge, my buddy Ray said this, the best revenge is a life well lived. So that guy can blow it out his butt. But that said, if I were like coaching, I don't know that I could be like, yeah, let's do 6 months with me and I'm going to make you an actor, because right away, all I need is six sessions with you. And I would go, do you have the capacity for this? Because I believe very much in, like, I don't think I'm the most talented person in the world, but I do think that like I have an aptitude to learn. So I would train someone like that. It's not all about inborn talent. I think you can get better. I think you can make yourself viable. But I don't know if I could like work with someone and take their money directly and coach them if I knew they didn't have the chops. And the truth of it is that not that many people have the chops to make it a profession. And I would, and it's not just that, it's about how tough you are too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if I could do it.
That's the hard part. And the ability to keep getting up, which I even think might be the biggest component is like, you can have talent, but if you get knocked down and you can't get back up again, you just got to keep getting up. And it's so uncomfortable sometimes, but you just got to keep getting back up.
Well,
and
let's be real about it. We do 500 auditions a year, 1,000 auditions a year, depending on, you know, from your agents or wherever else you're fielding your auditions from. And if we book 5%, we're crushing it.
Yeah.
Like 5% of real kind of jobs out of 500 or 1,000 is, you know, great. And so that means, are you good with being rejected 95% of the time?
Or more.
Like, are you, you can make a living booking 1%. Like, are you tough enough to handle getting turned down 99 out of 100 times? And I think that's the real thing about it. Also, there are so many people I've worked with throughout the years that are so talented that also just never got their shot. A big portion of it is serendipity, right place, right time, choosing the right path. But I do believe that tenacity is one of the most fundamental parts of all of it. The people that, it's really a war of attrition, especially in LA. And I think I was in LA in a really unique time. I graduated grad school in 2007, not the best time to enter the world. So I came to LA, things kind of cruised, and I like booked animated pilot like my first month here. And I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. And then the housing market crashed and the writer strike happened. And yeah. The whole city, I will say this, the writer strike was almost more freaky than COVID in Los Angeles, because people weren't just staying inside. People were leaving in droves. All of Hollywood shut down. There were no such thing as a protocol. It was the Writers Guild strike in 2008, mm-hmm. late 2008 to almost 2009. And if you're unfamiliar, everything shut down. Commercials, television, film, animation, everything just shut down. And I lost my job until I was working at a television production company. I lost that job. I couldn't get, there were lines around the block of actors trying to get waiter jobs with resumes. I remember I couldn't get a job with a master's degree as a pizza delivery boy. It was wild. But, and a bunch of actors left. But the people that stayed and toughed it out and dealt with it, as soon as things came back, which they always do, those people reap the benefits. So I really started to come out into the scene in like 2009. And because I literally think it was a war of attrition, there wasn't as much competition. And as you get older and move into older roles, that remains the same. You know, I don't have many friends now who are creeping up on 40 who are still in the business. And I work with thousands of people, and a lot more of them are chiropractors and real estate agents and investors and teachers and many other normal, respectable, fantastic jobs. And these are all people I thought were some of the most talented people I ever worked with. But it's a grind and a hustle. And if you're not built for it, you're just not built for it. But anyway, I hope that's not scary. I hope that's not too serious. Yeah.
So come on in. It's really great.
Anybody can do it. I'm an idiot. If I can do it, you can do it easily. You just have to be tough. Yeah.
Just tough. Get those muscles going on. I want to thank you guys so much to everybody that joined in live. If you like the show, next week we have Brian Hall coming on. Brian is an amazing content creator, YouTuber, and voice actor, starring in the new Hotel Transylvania 4, as well as Tangled, the animated series. He's going to be so much fun, so I'm really looking forward to that. And then I'm going on vacation to Yellowstone, so I will not see you the week after that. But
I bet we're going to be on vacation at the same time. It's going to be awesome.
preschool rounding up for the
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear all about it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Robbie, you're amazing. You inspire me, so I really appreciate your time.
You're amazing. Thanks for having me.
And, yeah. Oh,
hopefully.
Can I ask you one more favor before you go?
Yes, of course.
Would you mind just saying like, hey, check out this show. Allison's wearing this cool language.
Let's do it right now. How do I do it? Tell me what I need to say. You hit me with it.
You can put it in your own words, but just like you're watching Alice's Wonderland. This is because someday I want to edit these like story reels together. Just like, this is Robbie Damon. You're watching Alice's Wonderland. I love the show. Something like that. Or
you got
anything in your own.
Hey, this is Robbie Damon, and you are watching Alice's Wonderland. It's the best show. Tune in, stream it, download it, do it. You know you want to.
There you go, guys. That was amazing. All right. Well, if we're going to go jump over now and say good on TikTok, if anybody wants to join us over there, Robbie, it seems like you probably want to go and spend some time with your lovely wife, but I'll definitely be in touch. And thank you so, so much.
Well, I hope to see you in the studio soon.
Me too.
Oh, wait, I got it. Perfect. Come here.
Who's this?
Full circle. Say bye-bye. Bye.
Bye, honey. Bye. See you later. See you later. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Allison's Wonderland, where we explore the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more episodes of Allison's Wonderland, please visit us at www.allisonpackard.com. See you next week.